Hey, folks, this is Rick Emmett from Triumph, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
To be. This is small town music. This is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away. A song away. A song away.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room to promote the release of his new compilation album, Diamonds, the Hard Rock Years, 1990 to 1995. Please welcome guitarist and singer of the legendary band Triumph, Mr. Rick Emmett. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for that intro.
You are welcome. Rick, where are you located right now?
I'm sitting in my studio, which is called Eli's Loft, and it's in Burlington, Ontario, which is a sort of a western suburb city of Toronto. And my wife and I have lived here for about 8 years now. We downsized and then I knocked the back wall out of the house so that I could build this studio.
Oh my goodness.
So, and you see the horse on the wall there? That's Eli. So yeah. And I got all my guitars here. And this is a sort of a dream come true for me to have a facility like this. There's a digital recording station that was over there. So
what a beautiful space. And anytime you feel the creativity arise, you can just head down there to your happy spot.
Yeah. I mean, I've always had a studio in my house, but they were always like when we had kids, I got, you know, shuffled down to the basement. And this is great because I've got windows all around, you know, and it's a loft. So I was always kind of feeling like I was a troll, you know, all those years going down to the basement, no windows. And of course, back in the day, Metalworks and stuff, like you're in these facilities, there's no windows, you know. No. So it was like, oh, I wonder what the weather is like for the last week, you know.
Yeah, why go down in the basement when you can go upstairs to the light?
Exactly. So I waited till I turned 70 to get there, but here I am.
Well, here you are, finally. You've earned it. Rick, before we start talking about the new compilation album, I would be remiss if I didn't ask how you were feeling after your radiation therapy for your prostate cancer. I would feel weird just jump in and not talk about that.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm feeling good. I feel like they caught it early, and the treatment was, you know, other than being just a sort of a pain in the butt that you have to go, you know, every day for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
But once you've kind of got through it, you kind of go, okay, you know, I mean, I'm not getting any younger. So I have some arthritis issues in my hands and my shoulders and, you know, my everywhere. Generally speaking, I'm not doing too bad. You know, there was a thing about being there going through the treatment when you're in a cancer center and you're seeing people that they're in a far worse kind of, you know, they've been dealt a way worse hand than mine. So it's almost like you have imposter syndrome. You're going like, I shouldn't be here. Like, you know, I'm not that bad, you know, so I'm not that bad. But then out of the back end of it, I was doing an interview like this, and I casually mentioned, oh, yeah, I'm going for radiation. And went, what? Prostate cancer, what? And so then it became this public thing where I go, but the lady that runs my social media, Kathy Wagner, I said, I have this picture of me ringing the bell at the end. Let's do this. And she said, what, like a PSA for your PSA? And I'm like, what? That's a good hook. Yeah, sure. Let's go with that. So, you know. And I don't mind being that guy and talking about it because I think it's important. I think, you know, if guys get into their 50s and they kind of go, I don't need to see a doctor. Oh, I don't need to do a blood test. Oh, you know, but I think you always should be keeping an eye out for it. I mean, you know, most men will end up with prostate cancer at some point if they live long enough, you know. So It's just a question of, do you want to deal with it sooner or later?
Right. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when a celebrity puts it out there, it may, you know, it brings awareness, you know, much bigger than if just the normal guy on the street might be talking about it. But I know exactly where you're at. I turned 60 last week. My brother had prostate cancer. He's fine. He's 6 years older than me. But as soon as I found out that he had it, I get checked every 6 months. It's not a big deal. It's just part of the routine.
That's it.
That's all it is. All right. And I'm glad you're feeling well, and you look great. So
let's
move on to Diamonds. Now, can I just say Diamonds, or do you want me to say the entire title every time?
Yeah. Well, when we first were talking about it with Greg Campbell and Music in Motion Records, and you know, I said, well, let's just give it a title. And he was going, well, I want to call it, you know, The Hard Rock Years, the Ninanago. Keep all of that and use that as a subtitle. Okay. Let's call it Diamond. It's like hard rock has coalesced. The carbon life form has, you know, into this valuable thing, a diamond. Let's call it Diamonds. So, and you know what? There's other albums and compilations that have come out that are called Diamonds. I realized this after, but I go, I don't care. Whatever.
Whatever.
Just give it a moniker that's an easy thing. Yeah. So.
All right. The album comes out April 19th, 2024. When people are listening to this, it'll be April 18th. So pre-order it. Get this thing tomorrow. RickEmmett.com, at Rick Emmett on Twitter and Instagram. Two M's and two T's, people. Don't forget it. Rick, with over 10 studio albums, why does this compilation only concentrate on your first three? Absolutely, Ipso Facto, and The Spiral Notebook. By the way, all self-produced by you.
Yeah, I got the rights back for the masters. That's the short answer. You know, Duke Street Records was the indie that I made them for in Canada. They were distributed by Universal. And Duke Street had gone bankrupt a long time ago. And the guy that owned it, Andy Hermit, you know, I had this guy, Greg Campbell, from Merch in Motion, which then was Music in Motion Records. He came sniffing around and he said, can you get those rights back? And so this guy that has done marketing for me for such a long time, Rick Wharton, God love him, the Spud Man, he said, you know, what if you just reach out to Andy Hermit and ask him if you can get the rights back? And I said, okay, I will. And I phoned him and he went, yeah. I said, sure. You know, send me a two-pager and I'll sign it and you can have the rights. So I got him back. And the truth of that whole situation was the first album, we had made a deal with Charisma Records in the States, and then they'd gone bankrupt like a month after it came out. They serviced two songs to FMAOR Radio, and they'd spent so much money on the Right Said Fred single, I'm Too Sexy for My Shirt, that they'd blown their brains out and they went bankrupt. So that record was just right down the toilet. But the world was changing too. Being a guy that had been an arena rock, MTV rock kind of guy, that world was changing, and Seattle was on the rise. It was becoming a sort of a Nirvana, Soundgarden, you know, Pearl Jam kind of world. And record companies were going, Rick Emmett, but the guy from Triumph, well, I don't know, you know, I think he's too old. And so, you know, I was making these indie records, and they were going from being a sort of hard rock one to a one that was very eclectic. Ipso was a record that was schizo in three ways. And then Spiral Notebook was a very singer-songwritery kind of record. I was just getting older and going, well, I'm going to start making music that still moves me and works for me. And then by the time I finished those, I realized the mainstream doesn't want me anymore, and I don't really want the mainstream anyhow. I've got enough people so I became indie. I started just making my own records in my own basement and having my own thing. And so that was but these three records that have made this compilation, they were the ones that were sort of the transition from Rick being in Triumph to Rick becoming an indie artist that, you know, didn't really give a shit about anybody else. I think I'll make a jazz record. I think I'll make a classical record. You know, like, I did what I wanted to do and what I'd always kind of wanted to do. But, you know, if you're in a rock band and you have to have partners that are going, no, we must satisfy the image of the band. You know, no, we must satisfy what the record company wants for airplay. You know, these kinds of things. And then after a while, you're going, I want to make a record where I'm not worried about anything except, did I play classical guitar pieces well? That's what I want to do, you know? So that's what I changed my life into. This compilation, it shows the beginning of that. It doesn't go too far. It stays pretty much hard rock and electric guitar kind of. That's what Campbell wanted. And so we went, sure, there's enough to choose from. I can make another record out of that stuff. Another compilation is probably on its way.
I was going to ask about that. I was going to ask about that for sure. Now, you brought up MTV real quick. I was raised in a small town in Pennsylvania. So in my teenage years, I did not know about Triumph until MTV. And of course, Magic Power and just every live video that you guys released forward.
Something's at the edge of your mind. You don't know what it is. Something you were hoping to find. You're not sure what it is. Then you hear the music and it all comes crystal clear. Music does the talking and says the things you ought to hear.
Yeah, it just blew me away. I was like, there's another Canadian trio that isn't Rush? What the heck?
Yeah. Well, and we weren't really like them, because they had, they had really sort of decided to put all their eggs into the basket of, we're going to be a prog band.
Yeah.
And we're going to make, album kinds of adventures, and it worked for them. Whereas Triumph was much more like, when I joined the band, Gil and Mike said, okay, it's going to be like a huge spectacle. It's going to be production. There's going to be flash pots and cop car lights, and there's going to be, lasers, and there's going to be dry ice, and there's going to be, and I'm going, So they knew what they wanted to do on the one level. And then, of course, you make a record deal. And now it's like, well, we've got to get you on the radio, And I think Rush had sort of got to the point where they'd realized there's an FMAOR kind of world that existed for your Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd kinds of things. The other guys in Triumph, I would have been happy to try to take Triumph more towards that. But I think the other guys went, no. We want to have more accessible kinds of tunes. I mean, Gil, I think, really did like your bands like Kiss and Paul Rodgers' Bad Company. And so he wanted a more accessible blues-based kind of rock and to marry with the production. And so Triumph always had that side to it. And then I was the guy that Magic Power was, still trying to get on the radio, but a little bit esoteric, a little bit of prog there, So now we were sort of in that category of the bands that Rolling Stone magazine hated.
Right.
Foreigner and Styx and, Triumph was sort of in that ballpark. One of the minor players in that world of, like, Journey was probably the most major one.
Right.
And Triumph was, we opened for them one time. I met a guy the other day. And he said, oh, yeah, I saw you at the Rose Bowl when you opened for Journey. And I went, oh, man, yeah, I remember that one. Wow.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I also want to put it out there that you released your autobiography last year, Lay It on the Line, a backstage pass to Rockstar Adventure, Conflict, and Triumph. So everyone go seek that out also. Rick, do you, when you think about yourself as an artist, do you think of yourself as a singer first or a guitarist first?
Good question. And the answer is I'm going to go off the menu and I'm going to go, and I think I probably think of myself as a creative writer first. Okay. I'm a songwriter. And that's always been the thing. Now, you know, in my memoir, I get into this, that when I was a kid, my mom dragged me off to sing in the choir when I was 7, 8 years old. I was in school choirs and church choirs, and I was a pretty good boy soprano. I could get up there and I could, my pitch was solid, and I liked it. I enjoyed the idea of my body being able to generate this melody, you know. But, you know, got a guitar when I was about 9 or 10. Saw the Beatles on Sullivan 64, you know. And first thing, I learned a couple of chords on a guitar and I wrote a song. So the singing and the guitar was more about songwriting and being creative than it was about becoming a guitar hero. And the Beatles, they weren't about guitar heroics.
No.
You know, so where it started really was there for me. But I mean, you know, of course, along comes Clapton and along comes Hendrix and along comes, my God, you know, Jimmy Page and Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck and then, oh, Ritchie Blackmore of Deep Purple and then prog bands, Steve Howe, you know, I mean, my role models, my heroes, you know, that the influence was happening at light speed, you know, from about 1964 to 1969, 1970, you know,
yeah.
Before I'm deciding, yeah, maybe I'm not going to be a kid, you know, playing sports anymore. Maybe I'm going to start, you know, focusing in on guitars and got my union card, and, you know, started playing in country bands and polka bands. And, you know, like that's how it started for me. You know, I was a jobbing musician when I was still in my last year of high school.
So your parents were supportive of this choice you made?
Well, yes and no. You know, I mean, my mom, I think she was a suppressed kind of poet, artistic kind of person, loved singing in the choir and stuff. But she was old school. My dad was really old school. And it was like, no, music is a hobby. Music is not something you do for a living, you know. I'd had a falling out with my mom over religion. Early on, 11, 12 years old, I was starting to go, I don't think I buy into this afterlife stuff anymore. And I'm sorry, Mom, but I'm opting out, which, you know, big falling out with my mom. She still, you know, we loved each other and we got along, but there was a big gap that existed there. It had nothing to do with music.
Right.
But when I would go off to band rehearsals and stuff, she would be kind of supportive, but more like my, you know, supporting my dad going, No. You should be home by 10. You know, you're going to be a lawyer, right? You're going to be a school teacher. You're going to be, you know. But, you know, I started playing in bands, and then the writing was on the wall. You know, they came and saw me playing in a band where I was making a couple of $100 a week playing in a rock band, you know, and they kind of go, well, you know, I was still living at home, but I was contributing to their groceries, you know.
That's good.
So, yeah, it was like, and they started to realize, well, we're not going to change his mind. Maybe this thing will burn out. And that continued until I bought my parents a house.
It took that long.
Well, you know, I think they honestly felt like, well, okay, he's cobbling together his own life. We can't tell him what to do. He's too headstrong, you know, and he seems to be making a go of it. So we're not going to get in the way of this thing happening. But the joke I make is that I had already bought my dad a car and that didn't convince him. But when I bought them the house, it was like my dad finally said, well, I guess this music thing is working out for you. Right?
Eventually they have to come around. When success rears its head, they have to say, all right, we were wrong.
Yeah. Well, they never wanted to admit that they were wrong.
Of course.
You know, And you know what? Truthfully, maybe they weren't wrong. You know, yeah. It's just I got lucky, you know, and luck is something that plays into the way life works, you know.
That's for sure. I mean, look, you know, there's a guy out there that's better than you that never made it.
That is absolutely true.
That guy must be great if he's better than you there, Rick. I got to be honest. all right. How difficult is it to whittle 30 plus songs down to 11 or so for this new release?
Well, Greg Campbell had a strong sense of where he wanted to go with it as the label guy.
Okay.
And I had a fairly good sense of the fact that I mentioned this earlier, that I was going to try to have the harder stuff on one package and then move the softer stuff to another one later, the more esoteric one, you know, because that's how my life went. I kind of went from being this hard rock guy, you know, to being somebody that was completely self-indulgent.
Yeah. It's been 35 years since these tracks were, you know, first released. What did you guys have to do to these to make them sonically fit with what's released now? Did you guys do a lot of stuff?
Yeah, Greg Campbell has a partner named Vic Branco, and Vic has been around. He's got his own studio. He's had it for decades. And Vic is into this whole Atmos mixing thing now, but Vic remastered them so that they would have a much sort of more modern, crisp, digital kind of quality to them. However, I would like to say this, Pat. When you revisit stuff and you go, you know what? I didn't do too bad a job. First of all, the musicians that I hired to play in those bands, they were great. And there's some performances on there, some tracks from some players that are just, they're really, really well done. And it's a treat to get to hear them again. But from a recording point of view, I had a guy named Earl Tornow that kind of was the engineer on the Absolutely album. That stuff's a little too big reverb, big snares, big everything, you know. And I go, that was him and that was the times.
Yes.
And I do hear that in those tracks. I go, well, that sounds real 1990, you know. but that was the world, you know. That was, you had your sort of Whitesnake records and Bon Jovi records that were, and then everybody was trying to get that big, you know, Bob Clearmountain, Bob Rock kind of boom, you know, snares. And and there's no getting around that. You literally have to have the 2-inch 24 track tapes to be able to get at those like stems. And we didn't have those. I junked those a lot. We only had two tracks to go from. So we couldn't remix from the ground up, but we could remaster the masters. So we were able to do that. We didn't do too bad a job. I think I had pretty good ears from all the years. When I first joined Triumph, Levine was the guy that was kind of the producer.
Yeah.
Mike Levine, the bass player in Triumph, was the guy that had studio experience from before. He'd been in mix sessions for everything from jingles to albums. So he knew. He'd been involved in a small label, working with artists on a management kind of producer level. So then I mentored with him, kind of. But then once we built our own studio, that Allied Forces album, I was pretty much going, oh, well, I'm co-producing these things now. I kind of know what I want. By the time I was my own artist in 89, I was going, no. I know what I'm chasing here. I was writing songs like, there's songs like Middle Ground where there's soprano sax on that. And, you know.
Oh,
there's big vocals, like Big Lie and Stand and Deliver. There's stuff going on that Triumph shied away from. Triumph didn't necessarily want to become a vocal kind of band like a Queen or a Journey or a.
Right.
But I would have been more than happy to go there. You know, I think the songs that we'd had success with, like Hold On, was very vocal, harmony oriented.
Absolutely.
I sing this song for the common man and for the people. The simple truth lies waiting here for everyone to share. So hold on, and I will take you there. Hold on, and I will take you
Power had harmonies on it. You know, we were the radio stuff was harmony oriented. The other guys in the band weren't keen on that. So when I got it on my own, and when you mix records like that, you're always having to take the size and the amount of space that vocals are going to require.
Right.
You're going to mix to that. So even though the stuff was, you know, decades old, that's still kind of fresh because it's vocal oriented.
Yeah, those songs that you mentioned, those bring the ladies into the concerts back in the day too. You wanted the guys to be able to bring their girl to the same concert so that they could both have an enjoyable night out. So Triumph was able to give everyone what they wanted, the rock and the other stuff.
And, you know, I mean, there was a thing going on with, you call your band Triumph. Triumph of what? You know, and it took me till 1979 to start to figure out, well, if I write a song, Hold On To Your Dreams, it's kind of like a triumph of your own spirit, a triumph of your own, and in a positive, motivational, inspirational kind of way. That was what Triumph became as a vehicle for me, right? And so the songs had that kind of quality. Now, Magic Power, when I first wrote it, I was going, oh, I climb into bed, I pull the covers over it. It was literally about being 9 years old, 10 years old with a transistor radio.
Exactly.
But then I realized, wait a sec, if I make it, she climbs into bed, she pulls the covers over her head. Now you're making it so it's a much more universal kind of thing.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I was a kid that sang hymns when I was, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old. hymns are about everybody coming together. There's a lot of the collective we in that stuff. So Triumph, once it started to figure out this thing of you go from I to you to we, that became a big thing for me lyrically as a writer, as an artist. I was always looking to try and create that community.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
When you
got 2 minutes, buddy. 2 minutes.
Okay.
2 minute warning.
Boy, I don't know how we wrap it up, but we're going to do it. Yeah, I was thinking about the whole catalog, solo and with Triumph. Songs like Never Say Never from the last Triumph album, Surveillance. Someone is sitting having their radiation treatment right now, Rick, with their headphones on, and a song like that is getting them through it. And you probably maybe didn't think about that until you were going through your thing. But, you know, music is the medicine sometimes.
Absolutely. And you're incorrect. I knew it because we would get letters to our post office box, like right from the early days. And somebody would be saying like, well, you know, my brother committed suicide or my mother is an alcoholic, or, you know, oh, I was struggling with drugs. And then I started listening to your music and it's really helped me. It's really changed my life. And so Triumph had become that kind of a band for people. And, you know, I mean, man, when you're up on stage and you start and the flash pots go off and then everybody's up on their chairs and they've got their fists in the air. And there's a part of my intellect, a part of my brain where I'm going, well, I don't like this. This is like a Nuremberg rally. There's something spooky about this. There's a power here.
Yeah.
But if the power becomes about a power where you're going, you know what? You fucking people are awesome. I love you people. And I'm going to absolutely, you know, give blood if you want it, because this is all about the music. And so, so many bands, that's where they end up. The Stones got there. You too. They've just finished doing this long thing at the Sphere. That's, they realize this is what we do. We create communion, right? So I knew that existed. And I was always trying to write to that. And even when I'm playing just a guitar piece, there's no lyric. There's no mention of any kind of anything, but the music can function on that level where you are reaching out and trying to find somebody's heart and their head. And you're saying, I have been there. I know what that feels like. That's what this music does. And so, believe me, I understood the therapeutic value of it. And I was always going for it. Like, sometimes, you don't make it happen. You know, you go,
right,
that one's going into the garbage can. But, you know, sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you tap into that thing, you know. Look, Leonard Cohen once said, look, if I knew where the good songs came from, don't you think I'd go there more often?
Yes,
right?
Yeah. And every time.
It's an avocation, and it calls to you. But you don't always get lucky in the way that you respond. But every now and then you get lucky, you know, every now and then a song like Magic Power drops, you know, and you go, all right, thanks. Thanks a lot. I don't know where that came from, but thank you. Yeah.
All right. All my listeners, April 19th, go get Diamonds, the Hard Rock Years, 1990 to 1995. People who love Triumph, but might not be familiar with Rick's first few solo albums, get these albums. You will love them. Pick up this compilation. Watch the Triumph documentary that came out in 2021, Triumph Rock and Roll Machine. And Rick, when the next compilation comes out, I would love to chat again, hopefully have more time with you, because it's the tip of the iceberg today. And I get it. You're doing these like a junket, but I have one more question for you. And it is, I need a play out song for this episode. So which track off of Diamonds would you like me to use as the play out song?
Okay. Do you want one that's shorter or do you want one that's longer?
I want whatever one you want.
Okay. Well, I mean, first of all, a great one would be the hardest part because I love the solo. It was a one take blowout on the tag, but so that would be a great way to end it. So they should listen to that one on their own.
Okay.
Softest kiss.
The one I want to go to, because it deserved a better life than it got, is the song Bang On. Like, I just think it's like, and I love the background vocals and it's kind of like a Queen meets Rolling Stones song. So, you know, and it's a motivational, inspirational kind of a tune. So
I love the lyric in that song. The promise of the future is right here for the taking.
That's it, man. Yep.
You can't get better. So, Rick, thanks a lot for everything. And everyone else, please enjoy Bang On. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Pat. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Together, making that forever.
Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Pat.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm good. These things are going sort of back to back every half hour. So I've still got some energy, though.
All right. We'll see what we can do.